Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The term super forecaster may sound a little bit like magic or something involving tarot cards and a crystal ball, but super forecasting is actually rooted in science, taking a global network of people making predictions about the future based on research, frequently with more accuracy than individual experts in specialized fields. Recently, super forecasters have applied their skills to making predictions about COVID-19, like when we might see a vaccine and potential pandemic scenarios for the fall. We're joined now by Warren Hatch, the CEO of Good Judgment, Inc., a company that spots, trains, and works with super forecasters to come up with predictions about the future. Warren, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me today.
I'd also like to welcome an Illinois-based super forecaster, Brian Hartman. He teaches computer science in Monticello in the central part of Illinois. He's also part of Good Judgment's global network of super forecasters. Brian, welcome to the 21st.
Happy to be here.
And also joining us is another Midwest super forecaster, Chuck Harper, a retired toy store owner from South Bend, Indiana. Chuck, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
And we want to invite our listeners, if you have a question about super forecasting, maybe you've read the book Super Forecasting and you might want to try your hand at this someday, you have a question for our guests, you can always join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Warren, I'd like to begin with you. We gave a brief description in the introduction here, but what exactly is a super forecaster?
Hi. Well, I should also say that while not technically a Midwesterner, I did live in Minnesota for some time, so I still have visitation rights. and thanks again. So a super forecaster is one of the individuals who are the top performers in forecasting, and the forecasting that we do is with probabilities. So we think probabilistically, what is the probability that a vaccine will be in wide distribution by the end of the year? So Anthony Fauci says likely and things like that. We'll use probabilities, numbers. We're going to say, in our view, it's the probability is in low single digits, around perhaps 10%. And the super forecasters assign those probability estimates with very high accuracy. They were originally identified in a U.S. government research project that was tasked with doing exactly that. The U.S. intelligence agencies wanted to improve their own forecasting skills. So that's what this research project was about. And the super forecasters, many of them, including the folk, my fellow colleagues on the line here, came over for the commercial company where we're doing work with clients, and now the super forecasters are identified and trained over on our public forecasting site, Good Judgment Open, and we'll regularly go there and invite the top 1% or so to come and join the professionals.
And that's something where anybody can join. And we can talk a little bit about that later. But, you know, I wonder, before we get too much into that, maybe it'd be helpful for listeners to understand what super forecasting is not and what it's in reaction to. And I wonder if you can just talk briefly about the difference between what you're trying to do and, say, the pundits that people might see on cable television news talking about U.S. politics, for example.
Yes. So the dominant language of forecasting is still what we see so much on TV and the Sunday morning shows, where it's very vague. And it is words like likely. So a vaccine is likely, or this candidate is probably going to win. And what that does is it does a few things that are really not good for discourse. One is, what does that mean? What does likely mean? What I think that is might be different from what you think it is, or we may even have different views tomorrow versus today. The other thing is that words like that can be on either side of really 50%, either side of maybe. If there's a vaccine, I'd say, well, I said it would be likely. And if there is not a vaccine, it's, well, you know, I only said likely. So there's no accountability for it. And the last thing is that there's no way to keep to communicate in a shared language. So if we're thinking about a vaccine being available, or if we're thinking about the airports reopening, or we're thinking about schools reopening, it's so much more clear and beneficial to use a shared language like probability so that we can understand exactly what the path of recovery is going to be looking like. And the last thing too is that the numbers, these numbers provide feedback. And that's the real important part of becoming very skilled at forecasting in this way, is knowing when you say 80% probability of something occurring, over 10 instances, it'll occur 8 times and it won't occur 2 times. That means you're a very well-calibrated forecaster. And if you have that track record, then others can have confidence in the probability that you provide, that that's meaningful, just the way we do with the weather forecasters, right? So years ago, weather forecasters pioneered this approach and use the same kind of feedback mechanism that we use. And very good weather forecasters, they say 80% chance of rain, we're going to find out next weekend whether there's rain or not, and we can have high confidence in their forecast as a result. We want to be doing the same thing in public discourse.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking about super forecasting. And want to remind our listeners, you can join the conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show, 21ST Show. Brian Hartman, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You're a computer science teacher by day, but also a super forecaster. How did you get into this?
I was in the research that IARPA and UPenn were doing long ago, 6 or 7 years ago, and I found out I performed in the top 1%, and they flew me out to a conference in San Francisco, and I've been on board ever since.
I mean, how did you even get into that initial research group, though, I wonder?
I think I saw a link on an economics blog, as that was my undergraduate degree.
Okay.
And it seemed like something fun to do with some free time before I had kids. I got started that way.
All right. And Chuck Harper, you're based in Indiana. I wonder, how did you get into super forecasting?
It was written about by David Brooks in the New York Times, and that was my first notice of it. And there were links there, and I went to the site and signed up and started up the third season that they were going out of four. And that season, somehow I got to be named a super forecaster.
Interesting. David Brooks, one of those people that super forecasters are trying to kind of push against, I guess, in that sort of punditry mode. I wonder, to the extent you can talk about it, and maybe Brian, I'll start with you. In early February, Good Judgment predicted there would be between 100,000 and 200,000 COVID-19 cases reported by March 20th. The world hit the 200,000 mark just one day earlier. So, I mean, that was a pretty accurate forecast. I wonder, what are some of the other things now that you all are working on related to the pandemic?
We're working on, very fittingly, when the Major League Baseball season will open, which has had a ton of interest recently.
Oh, yeah. Stay tuned. We're talking about that in the next segment on our show today.
Exactly, so. Right? I'm pretty excited for that. We've talked about when New York City schools will open, UCLA passenger traffic at some airports, and then world cases, world deaths, United States cases, United States deaths. That's some of the COVID-related ones that I've personally been working on. There's other ones out there, but those are the ones I'm most familiar with.
Sure. And Chuck, what about you? Are there similar things you're working on? Anything different than that?
Certainly looking at the COVID, I'm kind of intrigued by what's been happening recently with the divergence between the increasing infections and yet the death rates continue to decline. I think at some point that's probably going to be a big story. There's just a lot there we don't understand.
Interesting. So, Warren, I wonder if you can walk us through the process of developing a super forecast. I mean, maybe you can give us an example of a prediction and I don't even know if you like the term prediction. You can enlighten me on that. But a prediction that Good Judgment has made recently and how you went about it from, you know, developing the question to coming up with a forecast.
Sure. And some people will have very specific definitions for these things. Like some people will think of a prediction as something Nostradamus does, where it's an absolute certainty. This is my prediction. It will occur. And that's not what we do unless we have a forecast of 100%. But whatever the words are, the main idea is that we're going to use probabilities when we think about an uncertain future. We're quantifying the hunches we have about what might be happening. That's the main feature. And so what we'll do when we work with a client, whoever they might be, is try and understand the decision they're trying to make. So in the case of some of the COVID work we've done, if you're involved in the hospitality business, then knowing when the amusement parks would be opening is very consequential if you're in that supply chain or working in that business. And so we worked with a client on coming up with this, with a testable proposition, a question where we can all agree what it is we're forecasting and that we can all agree come the day whether it occurred or did not. And so in this case, we said, well, what's the probability that Magic Kingdom will reopen? It's a very closed space. When will it reopen to the public? And we actually launched that question about a week before Disney had their earnings call. And the CEO was asked the question, well, when are you going to be reopening North American parks? And he goes, well, I don't know. I don't have any forecast for that. Wish we had been able to join him on his call or send him a quick note, because Brian and Chuck and our colleagues had a very high probability that they'd reopen before the end of the second quarter, and that's what we've seen here. So the main thing is we want to connect to decisions. We want it to be meaningful. We want it to be clear and transparent what's going on and what it is we're forecasting. And then above all, we want to be keeping score of what our track record is.
And I gather that's one of the keys here is that it's sort of verifiable, that these are things that you can then go back and check on the numbers check on the results to see if these things pan out. Brian, a recent Time Magazine article about Super Forecaster to mention that one of the skills of a super forecaster is humility, reflectiveness, some comfort with numbers. I wonder if you feel there's, you know, something about your personality that lends itself to this hobby of super forecasting. I don't know, maybe a certain Midwestern humility, not to be too essentialist about it.
Yeah, I think being able to admit when you're wrong is a key personality trait to have. If someone brings me data and says, you know, I know you've always thought this about yourself or this situation, but here's the data I have, here's the reasoning behind it, I've just always been willing to say, you're right, I'm wrong. I mean, that also makes for a happy marriage as well. So I think some of it is personality based. Yeah.
Do you get family members asking you to make forecasts? Should I marry this guy, or what stock should I buy, or anything like that?
Not exactly. There was some stuff. We had a Disney trip planned for spring break, and when one of the pundits made the news rounds that Disney wouldn't be open until 2021, I had some people talk to me about that. But other than that, again, Midwestern humility. I try not to go around telling everyone what I'm up to.
And Chuck, I wonder about you. If they're, do you get that reaction from people when they find out that you're into this? And beyond that, I wonder if there are any, getting beyond the humility, if we can for a moment, are there any sort of forecasts you've made that you're particularly proud of that were on point?
Boy, that's a tough question. We've made quite a few. I would say just kind of adding on to what Brian said, I think one of the worst mistakes you can make is to invest your ego in your position, because it makes it very difficult to change, and you want to be free of that so that as new data comes in, you can change your mind. Now, that would be, I guess, my advice. I don't know how much of that humility is Midwestern, but that would be my advice.
Yeah. Well, we've got just a couple of minutes left. And Warren, I want to wrap with a question from you. Earlier in our show today, we talked to, or we heard from a doctor who is leading a clinical trial for a potential vaccine for COVID-19. And I wonder if Good Judgment has any predictions about when a vaccine, or forecasts about when a vaccine might be available.
We do. And the specific question we have asks when an FDA-approved vaccine will be made available to inoculate at least 25 million people and distributed around the United States. So it's a very clear line we're aiming for. This isn't just a vaccine being announced. It's produced, distributed, and administered. And the probabilities that we have right now are distributed across different ranges of time. So we have a very low probability that that's going to occur before October. That's our first bin. The probability that it might occur in between October and March of next year is a little higher, 13%. And that's been edging up. The real story, though, in this particular forecast is the following time ranges, which is April to September, and then September to the following March, where the probabilities that we see such a vaccine widely distributed have been moving much higher. When the question opened, there was pretty widespread skepticism among the super forecasters that we'd see that before 2 years' time. And what they're doing, too, this is really an important part of good forecasting, is you look to historical examples. So How long does it typically take for a vaccine to be developed, produced, and distributed? It takes a long time. And headlines aside, there's still all that that must be done. Now, there's all these accelerated programs that are going on. And so we're seeing that in their improved outlook for about a year from now. And it's edging up a little bit for early next year.
All right. And we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. Warren Hatch is the CEO of Good Judgment, Inc. And we'll have a link to Good Judgment open if you would like to join our other guests, Brian Hartman and Chuck Harper, who are both super forecasters. If you would like to try your hand at this process, you can go to that. We'll have it on our Twitter page, 21ST Show. Thank you all so much for joining us. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.